This is podcast number 90 for the Well-Educated Mother's Heart. Hi, I'm Marlene Peterson, and we're talking today about ambition. Ambition. At the present time, a great effort is being made in the school and in the home to help children both to choose the work or kind of work they will do when they grow up, and insofar as possible, to train them for it. Vocational guidance and vocational training are phrases indicating activities of an educational nature that we are inclined to think are peculiar to the present time. Many excellent books have been written on this subject for the use of parents and teachers. Everything, we feel justified in saying, is being done to help those in charge of children, to help the children in this important matter of choosing and preparing for a life work. So modern is the entire effort that at first it would seem that if the children were to be helped in this, as in other lessons through the use of stories, those stories would necessarily be the very latest ones. But is this the case? Do the newest books for children and young people furnish the most compelling vocational guidance, the most effectual vocational training? I think both parents and teachers will agree that they do not. But that, on the other hand, the stories most helpful to children in this connection are some of the very oldest, those to be found in the Greek and Latin classics. Why is this? The reason, I believe, is to be found in the great and fundamental fact that whatever the heroes and heroines of the great classic stories undertook, they tried to fit themselves to do it worthily, by unremitting effort, by self-discipline, above all, by holding firmly to a great and noble standard. And far more important than everything else added together in preparation for our vocation are these particular things. Without them, the choice of a vocation, the training for that vocation, are almost useless. For, in order to make the best of a life work, a person must make the best of his life, of himself. This the heroes and heroines of Homer, of Virgil, of Ovid did. No better vocational guides for children could, therefore, possibly be found. Perhaps the first lesson that should be taught to children in this matter of their vocations, as in other matters, is the necessity of character. As soon as the children can understand, they should be carefully taught that while a good mind is an important help toward what is called success in life, it is actually of less importance than a fine spirit. A strong mind coupled with weak principles, a man or a woman thus constituted can win no real or lasting success. Old-fashioned, simple goodness is also that thing which is forever new-fashioned, and care should be taken that children understand and appreciate this extremely important fact. There are a number of stories that teach this truth, teaching it negatively in some cases, positively in others. One of the best of such stories for younger children is The Miraculous Pitcher. The desire for wealth, for material prosperity, these are apt to be in the minds of the children at the present time. They are apt to reflect the ambition of many of their elders for fine houses, for excellent food, for all those things which make for physical comfort. Philemon and Baucis had this ambition. Their simple story reflects it at many points, and their ambition was miraculously realized. In a moment of time, their poor hovel was changed into a marble palace, and they were provided with a never-ending supply of the sweetest and most invigorating food in the world, like unto the nectar and ambrosia of the immortal gods. Why was this? The reason contains the great lesson for the children, because Philemon and Baucis desired these good things of the earth in order that they might share them with others. This too is reflected from the story at many a point. A story that teaches in another way the necessity of character, even in the realization of an ambition for wealth, is The Golden Touch. King Midas desired gold before all other things, not that he might do good to others, or even to himself with it, but merely that he might feast his eyes upon it. He obtained this wish, thereby losing the power to gratify all other wishes. Even a young child will understand this, and older children will be quick to see that what finally saved for King Midas his life, as well as his happiness, was not gold, not his ambition for gold, but that fineness of his spirit which made him love his little girl more than all the gold in the world. Better than any other story will this story of King Midas safeguard the children against the danger of miserliness or closeness. I had occasion to observe an interesting instance of this not long ago. A boyfriend of mine, aged 12, a child of a distinctly commercial bent, had been engaged in gardening during the summer, making a considerable amount of money from the sale of vegetables. One day his grandmother came to spend the day at his house. She was much interested in the garden, of which she had not happened to hear many details, especially those details having to do with the sale of its produce. She had not heard, or had forgotten, that the boy was selling his vegetables at market prices, not only to the neighbors, but to his immediate family. Among the products she admired was some particularly fine corn. "It is the best that I have seen this year," she said. "I wish I were able to get such from the market." When the grandmother took her leave, the boy appeared with a small basket in which were a half a dozen of the best ears of corn. "For you, Grandma," he said. It was the first gift he had made from his garden. Later in the evening, his mother said, "It was very nice of you to give Grandma some of your corn. Of course, she didn't know that you were doing gardening as a business, or she would have offered to buy it." "I know," the boy said, "and I could have sold those 6 ears for 18 cents, and that would have just made another dollar in the bank. I came near not giving them to Grandma. Then I remembered King Midas and thought I would not change all my garden into money." He laughed a little shyly. The boy's mother had read the story to him at least a year before that time, she told me. No moral had been drawn, but unconsciously the lesson had been learned and, when needed, was put into use. These two stories will serve to teach the children the prime importance of character in any and every vocation. Still others are Romulus, founder of Rome, and how Cincinnatus saved Rome. The thoughtful child will readily see that Romulus and Remus would never have had the opportunity of fulfilling their great purposes had Numitor not believed in their royal origin. And how did it come about that Numitor did thus believe? The story tells us, seeing that they were of a high spirit. As for Cincinnatus, the farmer, cultivating with his own hand a little plot of scarcely 3 acres of ground, the children will learn from this story too, that fitness for an exalted position gives a man that position, whatever his original occupation. Here again, character was the chief vocational guide as well as the only vocational training. Cincinnatus was, above all, a man who made the best of himself, of fine spirit as well as of brilliant intellect. When once it had been established in the minds of the children, this basic idea that what a man or a woman is constitutes the main fact, not only as regards his life, but also in respect to his work, the other lessons regarding their relation to the world may be the more easily taught. One of the most vital of these lessons has to do with the maintenance of fair-mindedness and impersonal good feeling, even in the very thick of professional or business competition. Some portion of this the boys and girls will learn through school debates and athletic contests. When at the end of the one they shake hands with their opponents and at the beginning of the other cheer the opposite side. But they will be the more deeply aided both in learning and retaining this necessary lesson through an appeal to the imagination. And how can this appeal be more powerfully as well as more beautifully made than through the heroic episodes of the classics? There is perhaps nothing in all literature which embodies this principle with such simple clearness and also with such simple magnificence as that portion of the Iliad which tells of the contest between Hector and Ajax. This story, the duel between Hector and Ajax, should early be read to or read by every girl as well as every boy. A special emphasis should be, of course, put upon Hector's concluding words. But now let us exchange costly gifts, that Trojans and Achaeans may say of us that we, having met in this heart-gnawing strife, have parted like good friends. Whatever the vocation, whatever the other training for it, the training suggested by this glorious sentence should be given paramount importance. Two little girls, acquaintances of mine, learned this lesson through the story of Hector and Ajax. They are members of the same literature class in a small private school in which a literature prize is given once a year. Last year, the two children worked for the prize, and one of them obtained it. The children have been friends and neighbors from babyhood. Up to the time of the prize competition, there had been no rivalry of any kind between them. Their mothers followed with some anxiety the working for the literature prize, rather hoping that neither child would win it. Any ill feeling or coldness between the children would be such a pity, each of the mothers said, and if either wins the prize, this is very likely to occur. But it did not. The friendship between the two little girls appeared to be unchanged. Furthermore, the two mothers discovered that their little girls were making presents for each other, a knitted muffler in the one case and an embroidered collar in the other. Naturally curious as to the incentive that led to these gifts, the mothers questioned the little girls regarding them. "We wanted the other girls to know it was all right about the prize, only one of us getting it," the children said. "We wanted them to know we are good sports, like Hector and Ajax." The children had read the story together in one of their books. Like all great stories read in childhood, it had stood them in good stead when the moment of its needfulness arrived. In the small world of school, it had led the girls to practice the principle that will lead them to the finest sort of achievement in the larger world of business or professional activity. Not only to make the best of themselves, and as it were, to do the best with themselves, must children learn, they must also learn to do the very best possible with the work in hand, whatever it may be. This, too, they can most vividly be taught through a story. Sometimes a story that negatively rather than positively embodies this thought. Many of the stories of Aeneas teach this good lesson, none better perhaps than the story of the funeral games of Anchises. Boys and girls will readily see that Menetes lost not only the galley race, but also the opportunity fully to try to win it, simply and solely because he refused to try to do it in the best way. Because he was afraid. The failure of Menetes is further made clear by the success of Menestheus, who even when all prospect of first place was lost, still tried his best and, walking among his rowers, urged them to put forth their utmost strength and at least not to suffer the disgrace of being last. Because Menestheus did this, he received a prize. For the plodder as well as for the swiftly successful, this story contains not only vocational guidance, but vocational inspiration. Another story teaching this lesson in a different way is the tale of Aeneas's first great battle with the Latins. When Pallas and his Arcadian horsemen were obliged to dismount, and unaccustomed to a fight on foot, would have fled before the Rutulians, the words of Aeneas are memorable indeed. "I implore you not to flee. Your way lies through your foes, not from them." And again, when Lucagus leaped from his chariot, Aeneas spoke these other immortal words. "It is not, O Lucagus, the slowness of thy steeds in flight that hath lost thee thy chariot, but thyself, springing from thy seat, did abandon it." A boy or girl in whose memory are lodged these two great speeches alone is already considerably guided vocationally. In many another story is taught this lesson of being a good loser, and more important still, a good winner. Scarcely an episode in the Iliad, the Odyssey, or the Aeneid, but teaches it in one great way or another. In order to make sure that the boys and girls learn it well, parents and teachers can scarcely do better then bring to their attention as many of these stories as time and occasion allow. The words of Pallas regarding his father, "My sire knows how to bear either extremity of fortune," should be memorized by every child, who should be able to say it of his own father and should strive so to develop that his children, in turn, will be able to say it of him. Perhaps the thing most to be avoided in the training of children, either vocationally or otherwise, is smallness of aim or endeavor. The children should first of all be led to see that they must never strive simply, or even primarily, for their own personal advantage. They must seek to obtain in order that they may share. Very important indeed is it that this principle be inculcated in the children as soon as they begin to think of their future vocations. But more important still is another principle, namely, that the service of the community, of the state, of the country, is the ultimate aim and purpose of any and every occupation. This, too, the children will learn the more readily through the aid of stories. Of the many classic tales embodying this eternal principle, the story of the sacrifice of Marcus Curtius is among the very best. Short and simple the story is, but of fadeless brightness. If the Commonwealth of Rome were to stand fast forevermore, the soothsayer said that thing by which, more than all other things, the state was made strong must be dedicated to the gods. And what was this thing? A valiant and devoted citizen. This is it that the child who makes the best of himself or herself becomes. Having become this, dedication to God is inevitable.